When we see the Earth from space, we see ourselves as a whole. We see the unity, and not the divisions. It is such a simple image. With a compelling message, one planet, one human race. We are here together, and we need to live together, with tolerance and respect. We must become global citizens. I have been enormously privileged, through my work, to be able to contribute to our understanding of the universe. But it would be an empty universe indeed, if it were not for the people I love, and who love me. We are all time travelers, journeying together into the future. But let us work together to make that future a place we want to visit. Be brave, be determined, overcome the odds. It can be done.
Hello and welcome. It's your Let's Fix Football. This is your host, Gabe Ledger, and we are on BallowandOrder.com. My co-host, Evan Mateer. What's going on, dude? How you doing?
I'm all right. I was traveling to San Francisco last week, saw some friends, got out of Laredo. I'm home now.
Always nice to get out.
Charlie wants to say hi.
Hi, Charlie. It's good.
Yeah, our sometimes co-host, Charlie. Yeah, I'm ready to get started.
Yeah.
Talk some football. A lot of stupid shit happened while I was gone.
A lot of stupid shit happened. I mean, and, you know, just while we're on the topic of dogs, like, shout out to the awesome March Madness thing that went down where the Golden Retrievers beat.
Oh, yeah.
The 16 seed beat a 1 seed in the men's tournament, the first time ever that happened. That ruled because their mascot was a Golden Retriever, which is the best.
Yeah, so I'm not clear. Is it a Golden Retriever or is it a Chesapeake Bay Retriever?
Oh, it's a Chesapeake Bay Retriever.
Because that's the state dog of Maryland, and it's University of Maryland Baltimore College or Baltimore County. And this is so cool, by the way, because so I'm from the Baltimore area, as you know, but listeners might not. So I grew up there, and like UMBC is like, it's not a bad school. I'm not shitting on the school at all, but it's not like, you know, obviously not a normal basketball power. It's kind of just like a state commuter school. Like does really good stuff and, you know, helps a lot of people access higher education. But then to see them, you know, this, you know, little state commuter school fucking take down Virginia, not just a basketball powerhouse, but also, no offense, Virginia alum, kind of like a haughty, you know, old school out in Charlottesville, very elite institution. It was just all so good. And then to have it be not, they didn't just like eke out a win. They fucking blew them out of the fucking building.
Yeah. I mean, like, this is like the school that Thomas Jefferson started and all this shit.
Yeah.
Like, it's so cool that, and they got beat up. They didn't just lose. They got beat up, folks, by 20 points. It's not, that's a beatdown, and it was cool.
Yeah.
It was really cool because they don't play – Virginia never played a particularly interesting style of ball, and, like, they couldn't really score, but they always did better on defense. But if the problem is if the other team's hitting all their shots and you don't know how to play offense, which is basically what Virginia's whole shtick is, you're going to get fucked, and that's exactly what happened.
That is 100% why, like, defense does not win you NCAA championships because, you know, the way these small teams win, and they know it, you win by jacking threes and hitting enough of them.
Yep.
And you have to play so many games in the NCAA tournament that eventually you're going to hit a hot team and you're going to need to score, right? You're going to need to be able to outscore somebody eventually. And Virginia just happened to find that hot team the first game.
Yeah.
But Virginia was never built to score to keep up with these teams. Like, defensive ball just doesn't do it in a single elimination tournament like the NCAA tournament, which is why it's so good. And like if European people are watching or listening, the NCAA tournament, you probably hear this a million times from Americans. It is like, it is everything that England thinks the FA Cup is, but it really isn't. It is absolutely amazing. It's the single best, like, I don't watch college basketball all year, and then I watch the tournament. It's the single best American sporting event that we put on. It's just great.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. It also, I mean, you know, and that's really cool that we've started this soccer show, but with our basketball takes. But just if you'll indulge me one more second, I think it's also really cool with the March Madness stuff that it's less commercialized than the football, because Like, yeah. One of the things about the Super Bowl, which is like the really like the gala event of American sports, is that it's like 2/3 about ads. And like, it's like not even hidden at this point anymore. It's like people watch that shit like half for the ads, half for, or like, you know, fourth for the halftime show. And then it maybe you'll care about the games. A lot of the time people don't really care about the games, which is like pretty, like, I don't know, pretty dumb.
Yeah, it is just all drowned out by the spectacle, right? And so the spectacle just completely subsumes the actual game. And sometimes you get really good games, you know, like you had with the stupid fucking Patriots comeback.
Yeah.
You know, you can get really good games, and even this year's game was really good, but I never enjoy good Super Bowls, like, just as a fan.
Yeah.
Because of how much it's subsumed by the spectacle. But when you're able to sit down and watch, I watched pretty much the whole UMBC game, ever since I saw that they were, you know, kind of catching up in the first half. And like, you can just get a good sports viewing experience there. That's not, you know, you don't have to sit through a 40-minute, you know, Justin Timberlake halftime nonsense to just enjoy the sport.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's actually, you know, let's talk about some sports, because we had some interesting, you know, some actual, like, sports anyone listens to this show for. So we've got, first thing that I wanted to bring up was, I think, just to continue the avalanche of awesome MLS stuff with respect to the CONCACAF Champions League. So once again, MLS has placed two teams in the final four of the CONCACAF Champions League, and it's, you know, very possible that we will get an MLS winner of the CONCACAF Champions League. It's not like super likely, but it's also not, you know, much more likely this year than it has been previously.
Yeah, I mean, they've been checking off a lot of milestones, MLS, in the CONCACAF Champions League this year. So you've had milestones like the first team to, like, beat a Mexican side in Mexico, I think, was one of the milestones checked off. And there's a few others too. And it's really exciting, just because the CCL for so long had been a running joke about how it was kind of just another Mexican League Cup. You know, all the MLS teams would just go out in the group stages usually, or, you know, early in the knockout rounds, and really just get steamrolled. And, you know, it was pretty obvious why. There was just a huge gap in quality between MLS and the Mexican sides. I think, like, I don't think you want to overstate the teams doing better, but you also don't want to understate it. Like, there have been leaps of quality in MLS. I think it's hard to deny that the sides are, that they're putting out, are just better. I think the biggest improvement is just in depth. You know, they're playing, you know, they have better players down deeper in the squad, and so they're, you know, able to put out better midweek sides. Which,
I mean,
is, you know,
I think it's really good that MLS stopped playing really bad goalkeepers intentionally so that everyone would score more. I think that's really important.
That's the really crucial thing. So, you know, they, you know, when you aren't just manipulating your audience by, you know, completely tanking games in order to have high scoring games that Americans can follow, then you're able to put out better sides.
So we're joking about the pundit Alvarito Morales, who went on, I think this looks like ESPN Deportes, and went on this amazing rant about how actually, the reason that all the Mexican, like the Mexican people were particularly surprised by the results is that, MLS teams play terrible goalkeepers so that they can increase the score of the matches, which is, you know, pretty funny. I mean, I have to tell you, like, if you had asked me this like 5 years ago and someone had told me this, it wouldn't have shocked me, but it also, because I didn't follow MLS, I don't know anything about it, but like, I will say that it is indicative of like the kind of general feeling of the world towards MLS, which I think is changing largely because of the last couple years and how much better the league has looked. But still, like, the world does not have a great, you know, a great impression of MLS. And this Álvaro Morales's comments kind of underscore the kind of extreme end that people will go to when they're trying to figure out, like, or at least analyze MLS in the context of its relationship with Liga MX.
Yeah, so I think you're right. I think that there, you know, MLS has been a joke like forever, and that's only going to change with performances on the pitch. The problem is that there's going to be, as MLS gets better, a time where people still think they're a joke because they have, you know, the performances haven't quite happened yet. And so there's going to be a disconnect between what people think of MLS, that they're just a joke league that puts out bad goalkeepers to increase goal scoring to try to get people to watch, and what's actually on the field, which is increasingly better and better sides who are able to whip up on some of the Mexican sides in the CCL. And the end result of that disconnect, at least for a little while, is really, really, really confused Mexican League fans who are trying to figure out why they're getting played off the pitch by a team sponsored by an energy drink.
Well, yeah, and that, I mean, I'm still a little bit shocked by that. But that, speaking of that, actually, Red Bull Salzburg, I'm pretty sure, won against Bayern over the weekend. Yeah. So that's another team sponsored by an energy drink. Yeah, so, but here's what we can also say, though, Evan, is that MLS is not the most competitive league in the world. And the reason that we're bringing that up, and here's the thing. Alexi Lalas apparently said this on his podcast. I don't know about you, but I listened to his podcast.
So, I've made the same decision, and we were talking about this a little bit when we were talking about this quote. I made the same decision that I decided not to give old Alexi a download.
Yeah, I will listen to his show when he listens to this show. I don't feel at all like I am obligated to I'm obligated to listen to Alexi's show to make sense of this quote, because I think that we can probably guess what the basic contours are of why he would say something like this. And it's like the kind of, you know, back in the day, Evan, we had this discussion about like how American regulations basically at least tried to make a competitive league. So one of the reasons why you see like salary caps and stuff in the United States is you're trying to create a league where every team feels like this might be their year every year. Whereas like if you're in a league that has super teams, if you're, you know, the most that you can hope for, if you're like Girona or whatever, is to maybe make it into the Europa League or whatever. And like, but that's still a win and all this stuff. But yeah, so like the league is trying to make it feel like any team has their shot, though, let's be frank, it still doesn't really work that way.
Yeah, so the number one reason I didn't want to listen to the podcast for this, because it's like this is a new podcast, by the way, and this is so obviously just ridiculous clickbait to try to get you to download. Like, obviously, as you said, MLS values parity. They put rules in place to, you know, enforce parity, and the statistics do show that there is a lot of movement there. You can just look anecdotally, people going first to last to first, that type of thing. Like, it's just a lot of movement to who's in the playoffs, who's out of the playoffs. To say that all of this makes the league in a meaningful sense competitive is really stupid. Yeah. I think that the right word is parity. I think I'm willing to say that there's parity, and I'm willing to say that it's like, you know, there's a lot of kind of chaos and change in the standings. It's an unstable league in a sense. But competitiveness, I would want some part of an analysis of competitiveness to include quality.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Like, and I, again, if we cared enough to listen to Alexi's show, which again I just won't, maybe that he goes into a little bit better version of why this argument makes any sense at all, because generally, like, but here's the thing, right? I would imagine that the Chinese Super League is actually extreme, like has a lot of parity, or maybe it doesn't, I don't know. There've got to be terrible shitty leagues all around the world that have some amount of, you know, high levels of parity because they're so bad, you know, and like, right. It just, any team can fluke into winning the league that year because they're like semi-pro players.
Right. It might be less that MLS is the most competitive league that anybody cares about, so much as it's just the shittiest league that anybody cares about. And it turns out there's a bunch of other shitty leagues that nobody cares about.
Well, that's,
and
the
they're
thing.
All really quote unquote competitive too.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, I bet, like, you know, the, and like, you know, no disrespect,
the Chilean second division.
Yeah. Or like the fucking Canadian league. I don't even know if they have one, right? Like, but I bet that shit is terrible.
Right.
So like, yeah. I don't know. It seems like on either side of what competitiveness means, this isn't making much sense to me. But you know what, Alexi, come on, Let's Fix Football and talk about it. We're happy to have you. So I want to kind of close out this MLS segment by talking a little bit of Evan about some news that broke basically right after we finished recording last week, which is that MLS and Liga MX have signed a long-term partnership that will include a Super Cup, which is what we were literally talking about earlier this year.
Yeah, it's really cool. I'm really excited. So I know that this has gotten some kind of some, I don't know, negative reactions on Twitter with people kind of like, isn't that what the Champions League is for? The Champions League is literally the champions of, you know, the various North American, federations playing. And yeah, the Champions League is that. But I think
we still also have Super Cups on top of the Champions
League.
Yeah,
they still have Super Cup on top of the Champions League. Absolutely. And, you know, the idea of making sure that even in a time where maybe MLS teams aren't cracking into the Champions League final yet, you still have this kind of test between MLS and Liga MX. I think that's really cool. I think it's a really exciting match.
I'm psyched to watch it. I can't wait for like those. I mean, it's going to be a two-leg thing, which it's got to be, right? And I can't wait to watch those away legs for the MLS team suffering like in the Azteca or whatever. Like yeah. that rules.
Yeah. And I think it's also going to have, you know, it's going to be sort of two rounds too, because I think that the way that Mexico was going to choose their representative is the winner of the league and the winner of the cup are going to play to decide who represents them in the Super Cup. And I don't know if MLS is going to do a similar thing between like the champion and supporters, a shield or something like that. I'm not sure that all the details are worked out.
I would imagine that MLS would want to follow suit, but that's annoying. I actually with they would just choose one of each. Logan is in here with me, by the way. So he says, hi, Logan, can you not do that, please? But yeah, so that kind of rounds out our MLS stuff basically today. We have a bunch of other things that we want to talk about and get to. Let's do quickly... to kind of bridge the gap into Europe, let's just quickly throw it out to the Greek League. Not exactly a league I follow very much. They're occasionally in the Champions League, so we know about Panathinaikos or whatever. But yeah, so the Greek Super League match between PAOK and AEK Athens was postponed after the owner of AEK after the owner of PAOK rushed onto the pitch with his gun after a late goal was disallowed.
Yeah, so this is a man who went to a soccer match, and he's not just strapped. Like, you know, he's not just packing heat. It's like right there on his hip, in his holster, a big fat revolver, and he's fucking running out there pissed off about something. And I just wonder if at any point – he started wondering, why is everybody freaking out? Why are they running away from me?
They just forgot he had his gun on him.
Forgot that he's fucking loaded and running out there. Like, I mean, he didn't draw the gun. So I guess that's good. But he didn't like actually draw the gun on the referee, because that would have been some really crazy shit. But the image of this dude just with his, like, he's got like a button down tucked into his jeans with a fucking revolver and a holster. Just a beautiful image of absolute madness.
Yeah, it is absolutely insane. And it's what really got me, when I first heard about it, what I heard was like, there's no way this happened. But then I followed and I found out this was actually like relatively respectable sites we were reporting, and then it was like got a write-up with pictures, and you just see the gun, it's right there, and like I thought he'd rushed on like waving the gun around, which had been funnier, but like in this case it's actually like kind of scarier, because like you get the sense that he could reach for that shit at any moment. I mean this is awesome, this rules, this is exactly the kind of story that I want to see. I let you know, I'm team crazy dude. Like, if you're the owner of a team and you see a disallowed goal, I mean, I think it kind of rules to rush onto the pitch like a crazy, drunken ultra. I mean, it's kind of cool.
I mean, I was totally down with it, except for everything is crazy and people are crazy. And this is a world where, like, referees have been decapitated on soccer pitches before. And I'm just really worried, like, the next time he just starts fucking shooting people or, like, impale someone with the corner flag. And that all seems really not great.
Although, as we've seen in the previous show, using the corner flag to defend yourself has been a useful and used move by people.
Well,
so.
Corner flags don't impale people. People impale people.
The only way to stop a bad guy with a corner flag is a good guy with a corner flag.
Exactly. Or an owner of the team with a gun.
That's a good point. But this dude, yeah, I mean, like, that's totally right. I mean, look, it's hell world. Everything's terrible. And having people, like crazy people having guns is just bad generally. So maybe don't have a gun if you're the type of person who could get really nuts and run onto the pitch and try to fight the referee. Maybe don't. So in other European news, obviously it was a Champions League draw happened. Obviously, I want to quickly take a laugh at Manchester United again for going out against Sevilla, which was, you know... absolutely wonderful, and it's one of those things that for me just it just capped off what was otherwise like a kind of mediocre week. But like that was so good, Evan. Like, it's just the pure Schadenfreude I have about that. It's just
So I enjoyed it to the extent that everyone was laughing at Spurs for losing a tough match because of 7 bad minutes of football against Juventus, who was a, you know, several time Champions League runner up and, you know, was the best team in Italy and is going to be a champion, et cetera, et cetera. And then United fucking just shit out to Sevilla and look like listless crap for the entire match. And they just didn't even bother to show up. And I should probably be angry at how bad the counter narratives are, but I kind of enjoy just exposing the hypocrisy of United obsessed English media. And so it's right? fun just watching them not have the same narrative of, oh, is Mourinho gonna bolt to a bigger club where he can actually win? They completely bottled it, blah 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 blah.
Yeah, it rules. Especially because, I mean, look, as we've said before, I think United has in with a shout in terms of worst fan bases out there. They have really distinguished themselves this year with the amount of shit that they're talking to every other group of people, despite the fact that their team has just bottled it the entire season.
They are not good. They're just not good.
Yeah, and they're not good despite investing just a goddamn truckload a huge truckload full of sacks with dollar signs on them, like just dumping that shit right into Mourinho's pants.
I just literally die every time Mourinho says that they can't keep up with the spending of City. I'm like, what the fuck are literally you talking about? For a while, Pogba was the most expensive player in the world, and
yeah, that
like
that
what
also
are you talking
rules
about?
Like, that's really cool, and like, partially, like, he has to say shit like that because he wants his people to spend more money. But like, as we've detailed in just excruciating detail, it just doesn't make a difference if the people that you purchase with that money aren't good, and like, or aren't as good as you need them to be, or don't function in a coherent unit. The first Madrid Galacticos project proved that. Second of all, trying to recreate that Galacticos project is a dumb idea in the modern market where everything is fucking 10 times more expensive than it was. Real Madrid got the Ballon d'Or winning Ronaldo for like 50 million euros. And that was the most in the world at that point.
Yeah, I don't know. The spending thing is weird. We've talked about spending a lot on the show. It certainly helps to have a shit ton of money to spend. Pep certainly has shown, you know, that you can build a fucking Death Star of a team by spending 500 million, you know, euros or whatever in one summer. But we've talked on the other side of the ledger a million times about how spending well is way more important than just spending. And, you know, Mourinho, I mean, a lot of these players were poorly purchased before he got there. It's not like his transfers have been fantastic since he got there. And it's not like his team has been super well managed. So
right.
I would love to know what United fans think at this moment about that little contract extension he signed. And it just gives me a little warm and fuzzy to think of United suffering for two, three more years to come.
I will also say that Real Madrid played in the last two matches. They played against Eibar, which is a tiny team with rocks like a 7,000 seat stadium in the Basque mountainside. And then this weekend they played against Girona, which is also a tiny team outside of Barcelona. And both of those teams are fighting for European spots right now. And I think it would just absolutely own if Arsenal plays one of them like in their first group stage game, like Arsenal travels to Spain to go to like Ipurua to play, you know, Eibar in front of 6,000 people.
It would be very fun.
Yeah. But yeah, so at Manchester United, you guys need to really dial it back a little bit because pretty insufferable all year on Twitter. Speaking of other insufferable people, Real Madrid was drawn against Juve. Both fan bases are extremely insufferable as well. So I wanted to quickly shout out all the shitty pundits who, as soon as this draw happened, picked Juve immediately.
Very stupid, by the way.
For the life of me, I don't understand it, especially when Madrid has been consistently proving these same people wrong in the Champions League every single year. They choose... And, like, these are people that chose every single match in the last 2 years basically against Madrid. They're like, oh, well, they got drawn against PSG. Oh, it chose PSG. Like, well, the year before that, it's like, oh, they got drawn against, you know, Bayern, against Atletico, against whoever. And it's always the other people, and they never bet on Madrid, which is, I mean, it's dumb, and it's so weird. Like, I don't get it. It's not like Madrid is, like, you know, Sevilla, right? Like, this is, like, the whatever. I'm not like, I mean, it's funny because like, it's not like I'm actually pissed off about it. But I just, that it's just really strange for like, in this to be like, what seems to me to be a bit of a blind spot for an entire class of pundits.
It's dumb.
Very dumb.
It is very dumb. And speaking of Champions League, obviously Sevilla will be shipping up to Germany. Don't expect them to come out of that, though they are a, you know, a fun team. But and the obviously the most interesting match of this group of this stage, Liverpool playing Manchester City. I think that's the most interesting match for me.
I don't actually think it's that. I actually think Juve Real Madrid's more interesting, and I'll tell you why. It's mostly because Man City is going to paddle the shit out of Liverpool. Like they're just not even close to the same level. And City's probably going to have the title, like the league. I mean, the league is already sealed up. They might actually have the trophy in their hands by time the you know, these ties come around.
Wow.
And I think the math is right. And so they're literally going to rest everybody for the Champions League. And I think if it was less than like 4-goal lead on aggregate, I'd be pretty surprised.
Wow. All right. Well, Teddy, you are more than welcome to shit on Evan as soon as you hear this. shout out Teddy, my friend from high school. Great dude. Big Liverpool supporter. A quick aside, I want to tell you a story about Liverpool playing AC Milan in the Champions League a couple years, or way back, Champions League final. Teddy did not get to watch that match, but I did because I skipped school because I was a absolute...
Yeah, cool.
Because
you're a cool kid.
Because I'm a cool guy with regular things, and I was skipping school and like... drinking beer when I was, you know, 17. But
edgy,
very edgy. So I got to watch the match, and Teddy, I didn't know if I forgot or not, but Teddy, you have to remind me exactly what happened with this. But I think I texted Teddy to say something like, I'm really sorry, bro. I can't remember if it was because I was like drunk or I just forgot that Teddy, you know, had done this.
Not seen the game yet,
but I ruined it for him. It's such an unpleasant one too, because I'm pretty sure it's the game where Liverpool was up and then AC Milan came back.
Ouch.
Yeah. So, all right. So that's that. I did want to shout out to, we've had a couple of people, come on. And obviously, Mohamed Salah is having an absolutely bananas good season. But I wanted to shout out the pundit who came on and said that he thinks that Mohamed Salah and Lionel Messi are basically the same.
Oh. It's not just a pundit game. It was Jurgen Klopp who suggested that he was on his way to being spoken in the same breath with Messi, which is obviously so fucking stupid. And here's the other stupid thing about it is, what does Jurgen Klopp have to gain by uttering those words? Is he just trying to lure Barcelona to come in with a 200 million euro bid and be like, oh, he's going to be the next Messi? Well, we'll take one Mo Salah, please.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, this is literally like putting him on a plate for Real Madrid or Barca to just come in and be like, I mean, I think it's more likely Madrid would come get him, but like,
yeah,
to just come in and be like, oh, that's really cool. Like, here's the money that we were thinking of giving to Neymar, but because you said this guy's as good as Messi, maybe we'll take him off your hands too.
Yeah, we'll take this guy. Looks great. So that's what's so stupid about it, besides it being like objectively dumb. Like, he's having a great season, he's scoring a lot of goals.
He's young, you too. Know, I mean, like, he's 25. He's a good player.
But like, by the time Messi was 25, I think he had already won like, what, how many La Ligas, how many Champions Leagues, several of each. And, you know, it's a stupid, dumb comparison. It's Mo Salah's game actually, I think, only really has one similarity to Messi's, which is these kind of slaloming runs that he makes in the box and makes people look really stupid. And then, you know, rifles the ball in the top of the net. Like, that particular play that he pulls off a lot from the right hand side, you know, that looks kind of Messi-ish. But there's so much more that Messi does that he doesn't do, be it free kicks, be it distribution. Like, let's calm down.
Yeah, let's all take an extremely big sip of whatever drink is your choice. But I would say that I like him a lot, and he does rule. And there is one place where he also is kind of like Messi, and that's in the fact that, like, they're both kind of squat and not particularly good looking.
That's true.
They both have kind of scraggly ass nasty beards. I mean, no disrespect, Salah, but you're not like, I don't know, Paul Pogba's a beautiful looking man. Like, that's
Egypt is in the World Cup, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's going to be a lot of fun. Like, watching him just kind of waltz bright pie a lot of, like, you know, shitty, whatever national team defenders, like from
Panama,
Panama or whatever. That's going to be really fun.
Yeah, it's going to roll. It's going to roll. I am really upset that I'm so excited about the World Cup, Evan. I gotta tell you, I shouldn't be as excited.
I'm not excited yet. I guess I will. I'm not letting myself be excited yet.
It's like literally my favorite thing.
It's so good, but I'm just so fucking salty. I cannot help the salt, and it just, I'm still in a place where I think about the World Cup and then I get sad.
I'm still a little bit in that place. I'm extremely excited about it because it just, there's so much happiness that it brings me to be able to watch these games. And
I feel like it's easier for you because you've got Spain, which, you know, has always been kind of the first soccer love.
Yeah,
to watch. For me, like, for me, the World Cup is, the U.S. and the World Cup is super special because it was how I got into soccer in the first place. Like, I watched the 2006 and 10 World Cups before I even came close to watching club soccer. Like, it was really 2011 or so when I started watching club soccer.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be really hard for me to watch a World Cup without the U.S. just because it's like, that was, you know, so important to me getting into the sport.
I bet anything. We'll find out because we're probably going to do this show while the World Cup's going on. But we will find out because I think that you're going to turn around. You're going to watch every game.
I think I'm almost sure that you're right, but it's really hard for me to, like, get pumped for it. Like, I haven't read any of the preview pieces. I haven't really been paying attention other than when, you know, people are like, other than the diplomatic spat between Russia and Britain, which is hilarious.
That rules. Yeah. All the pieces about, like, oh, like, who, are we going to even, like, send a team now? Like, all this stuff. Yeah, and then,
like, oh, no one from the royal family is going to go to,
wow, I really showed them.
Like, yeah, you got them. You showed country that once executed entire royal family.
Right. It's like, yeah, we're not going to send you our, like, shitty, like, failed son, second in line to the throne guy that's whatever prince is the one that wore the Nazi costume. I bet he'd fit in really well in Russia, too. But whatever. Yeah, that all rules. I'm really excited about it. I know we shouldn't be because, like, FIFA is terrible. And, you know, what was amazing also is this last week, FIFA came out and gave a statement on Russia and on the, you know, the fact that, and we talked about it last week, right, that Russia poisoned some diplomats in England and that that England is retaliating with some of these strange World Cup related things. There was all this stuff. So yeah. FIFA came out, Gianni Infantino came out and said, we don't involve ourselves in politics.
It must be really difficult for him to say it with a straight face, like, to actually come out and just say, yeah, that's political. We don't do politics here. Rules. We stick to sports.
It's just like, Well,
and kind of on the politics and FIFA front, so the U.S. and Mexico-Canada joint bid was submitted along with the Morocco bid. And I think we've alluded to the show a little bit, kind of the stories that Morocco is might be more serious threat to the joint bid than people thought. But the joint bid, the North American joint bid, cut down the number of cities to like the final list of like 23 cities that would host games for the World Cup, 17 of which are in the U.S. and the remainder, I think one or two are in Canada and the rest are in Mexico. But a couple big cities dropped off the list, including Chicago and I think Vancouver dropped out. And Glendale, Arizona. So a few kind of like big cities with big stadiums dropped out. And they pretty much said that FIFA was essentially trying to extort completely ridiculous terms. And I was reading some of the terms. They are pretty fucking crazy. Like they were going to demand that Chicago build a temporary dome over Soldier Field.
What?
Yeah, they were going to require them to sign a bunch of indemnities that were actually illegal under Illinois law that like would make the city liable for a whole bunch of other stuff that they normally wouldn't be liable for. And apparently like, yeah, apparently it's like completely it's impossible for the city of Chicago to agree to this under Illinois law. And so they had all these ridiculous things that are just, you know, and these financial commitments, these tax and legal liabilities they had to take on for FIFA that they pretty much looked around and they're like, yeah, we can. I think the city of Chicago will be just fine without a World Cup game. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and like we also know from like the famous like Jerome Valky, we know him from obviously our conversation with Ernesto, but also we know him from that famous video where he looked into the camera and just told all of Brazil to go fuck itself because it had passed a law that said you couldn't drink beer in stadiums. And he said, yeah, no, we will change the law. Like, we're just going to, you must change the law. You must have beer at the football is, must happen. And they did. They fucking changed the law for FIFA. But they fucking put that law into effect, as we've said on the show previously, because people were murdering each other. Like, there's a good reason not to have beer at the football games if people are killing each other.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is all just highlights how stupid a statement is that FIFA doesn't do politics when they're literally, you know, compelling host countries to actually change laws. Like, what is more political than involving yourself in the legislative decisions of a host country? That's even more political than, you know, what we were talking about just a second ago with negotiating with individual cities. But that's still fucking political, too. You're still trying to muscle these cities into taking all these actions that would expose, you know, host city citizens to liability and tax, you know, indemnities and all these other things so that FIFA can just print more money and, you know, have it disappear in whatever nonprofit abyss funds Sepp Blatter's fucking mansions.
So apparently now we've had Chicago, Minneapolis, Vancouver, and I think one other city have all pulled out for basically the same reason as Chicago.
Yeah.
And instead of commenting on, you know, the fact that this is happening and the fact that, you know, one of the reasons these cities are leaving is because they don't want to get themselves embroiled with the manifestly corrupt organization, which is, you know, that is 100% fair also. Like if you're one really good way to get federal FBI agents investigating you is by agreeing to host a FIFA, you know, World Cup game because if you've done anything shady ever, you probably get that shit found out. So like I get why Rahm Emanuel's like, we can't have that in Chicago.
So
FIFA, instead of commenting on all of that, referred the different reporters who asked about this to a document that I have here called Overview of Government Guarantees and the Government Declaration. And it is quite intense. I'm just going through right now, like it's amazing because the amount that they just are brashly requiring the host governments to, you know, take on is absolutely absurd. Like there's an entire four pages on tax exemptions that are required.
Yeah. Full tax exemption for host associations, continental football confederations, and FIFA member associations relating to the competition and or competition related events.
Yeah.
That's just one section of it. Oh my God. They have a chart. They have a six tiered chart that shows you all of the people you have to exempt from taxes in order to host a FIFA event. It starts with FIFA and all of their subsidiaries, goes to the host association, goes out to FIFA service providers, then out to FIFA contractors, and then finally out to designated individuals.
Oh my God.
Taxation or allowances and value in kind.
This is amazing. Listen to this part. This is Section 7, Government Guarantee, Waiver, Indemnification, and Other Legal Issues. It says, FIFA and FIFA World Cup subsidiaries and other FIFA subsidiaries must not be legally prevented from or limited to exercising any of their contractual rights under the hosting agreement or any other contractual agreements with other stakeholders by virtue of the government guarantees, particularly any claims against or any other legal exposure of FIFA, the 2026 FIFA World Cup, or their subsidiaries, and any other FIFA subsidiaries or other related stakeholders. I got to tell you, I wonder whether if they were to sign a agreement like this, it would potentially limit the options that American investigators would have to look at the FIFA, look at some of the books and stuff, Evan.
I mean, I would have to imagine that the FBI would scoff at this document.
Yes.
Like they might say, okay, that might mean Chicago's, you know, inspector general has, you know, agreed to not get in the way. And that's perfectly fine for him. But we're the FBI. And, you know, frankly, fuck you. We're going to look at what we want. But I think it would hurt you a lot if you were like a vendor who got completely fucked by FIFA and you were trying to sue them in like Chicago courts or something.
Yeah. Yeah. No, of course they'd get around all of it. It's one of these things that as a lawyer, you have to look at, right. Kind of broader implications, literally any contract that you sign. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at one last one that I wanted to do is, so this is government guarantee number 6, which is telecommunications and IT. And the last bit is amazing. Government guarantee number 6 must be issued regardless of whether the government or any privately owned third party is responsible for the telecom and IT infrastructure in the host country. In the latter case, the government must issue government guarantee number 6 and secure the corresponding undertakings and guarantees from the relevant third parties as applicable, which is basically saying you have to give us full access and full rights to distribute and use all of your telecommunications infrastructure, regardless of whether you actually even have the power to do that.
Right. You best figure it out.
Right. Because like that's what is amazing. Like, if it's privately owned, the government can't really sign this without already having negotiated with the privately owned telecom company. That's amazing. Yeah. This is so brash. I fucking hate FIFA so much. This is why, I mean, I just am angry at myself for being excited about the World Cup at all, but it's just so upsetting.
I can imagine that like Putin had no problem just signing this whole shit, you know, in a heartbeat because, you know, this is just the political world that he operates in.
He's like, yes.
It's just like a completely different thing.
We'll get the contracts.
Exactly. Like, who gives a shit?
There's no problem.
He was never going to tax, anything that, you know, giant FIFA made anyway, because he's getting paid off a bajillion dollars.
Well, you need new roof over Moscow Stadium. Yes, we build. Jesus Christ.
Oh, God. Sucks.
Oh, my God. So just a last couple of things. I wanted to shout out to two, and this is a short show just because whatever, but I want to shout out two awesome things that happened this week. First of all, extremely big shout out to James once again, James Rushton, because he got Mark Hamill to respond to a tweet about Aston Villa. It just rules.
It's amazing. It's really, really funny.
It rules.
And
it rules.
It's so cool.
It's so cool. Fucking Luke Skywalker said he would consider Aston Villa to be his team. That's awesome.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess what happened was Mark Hamill had picked Wolves, the championship side, you know, Wolverhampton Wanderers, to be his team, which I guess, he was challenged on. Saying that he had picked the wrong team.
Which rules. Also rules.
and which is very funny. And trolling celebrities like this where you're not being mean, but you are poking fun of them. That's always great.
Yeah.
It's very
also
funny.
Also, being mean to celebrities is fun, too.
You can be. But Twitter gets so meh.
No, it's not about being mean. It's about, like, making jokes and dunking on them.
Yeah, like, dunking on celebrities is fine. Mean, venomous tweets are boring.
No, they are boring. They're hacky.
A very funny tweet.
Yeah.
And he says, would it help if you knew? I've never seen a soccer match in my whole life. This is Mark Hamill. I thought they meant the animal when asked if I liked the Wolves. Does Aston Villa have a mascot?
That rules.
It's rules. Fantastic.
Someone just asked him if he likes Wolves. And he's like, yeah, man, like, I do, I guess. A weird question.
He's a Wolves fan.
It's like, yeah, I guess I consider myself a fan of Wolves. Like, the good animals, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it's strange. Which,
like,
strange that you'd ask me that.
That's such a better way of coming to, a European soccer team than most of us American European soccer fans have as a story, though. It's like, because they're going to make the Premier League this year, probably. And he would actually have a good story. He's like, oh, well, funny thing. A reporter was asking me about my favorite mammal. And I said, Wolves. The next thing you know, someone's mailed me an orange jersey.
And I'll also just, this is a new segment for us, but I want to do a quick, live check-in with the Olympique Marseille Twitter account, which has been continually shut down over and over again over the course of the last couple months for different violations of Twitter rules. so just checking in right now, it does seem like they are operating, but what happened this time, the previous time, it's also unclear, but this time apparently, I'm translating because I don't really speak French, but the account was suspended for a little bit following complaints of rights holders on a music that we put of players arriving at a stadium 3 months ago.
Fantastic.
And so there are a lot of people in at OM Officiel in their mentions being like, this is all PSG's fault.
That's right. PSG with their big conspiracy to shut down the OM Twitter account.
It rules that they would do that.
That'll get them.
You know, it actually is a conspiracy that I would normally totally lean in on, just because actually, if you think about it, like how would they know? Like, if the only way that you would know if you're violating some extensive media, whatever, is if you're a media company and the people that own PSG is the media company that broadcast OM's games.
Oh, God, that's a good point.
So I just, for what it's worth, I mean, I get the conspiracy. I mean, I think it's no chance that that's what's going on, but
the French league's a fucking mess.
It's a fucking mess. We did this whole thing, remember, about how if one of the ways that PSG could evade FFP is by renegotiating, quote unquote, the French league contract.
Yeah.
Yeah, it rules. I mean, the French league is a goddamn mess, though. That rules, though. It's really cool. I'm going to keep checking in occasionally with the OM Twitter feed because they're really funny. And the people that are in their mentions are really funny. And one thing that this, reading up about the FIFA World Cup, this is the way I want to go out on this, is I went from OM to a conspiracy involving British people being poisoned with bad beer at the World Cup, to finding out that there was a Twitter handle, Evan, called @Russia. And I had this thought. I was like, I bet it's really funny to see what people are saying in the mentions of @Russia. And it is exactly what you'd expect. It's 100% exactly what you'd expect. It rules.
Yeah.
I would encourage you to go check out the mentions.
I'm going to go straight away when we're off the show.
So that's basically all I have today. Eva, do you have, is there anything else that you wanted to pop in to say?
No, I think we hit all my favorite stuff from the week.
All right. Yeah. So we are going to do a more serious show next week or coming up. I'm still putting together all of the contingent parts for that. But yeah, I still want to talk about the Tehran Derby stuff.
Yeah, that's good shit.
Yeah. And there are a couple other people I want to bring to talk. I want to talk a little bit to another MLS person maybe about the CONCACAF Champions League when we bring Kevin back on. So yeah, just watch this space. You've gotten a couple of our original bullshit episodes. I think it's time to give you guys some actual food. This is the dessert episode. This is us making jokes about stupid soccer Twitter stuff. So that's sort of what we got planned coming up. All right, buddy. So I'll talk to you next week.
I'll catch you later.
Bye.
I'd like to start, if I may, with Professor Hawking. How did the universe start? With a Big Bang?
We observe that distant galaxies are moving away from us. They must have been closer together in the past. It was the beginning of the universe and of time itself. Anything that happened before the Big Bang could not affect what happened after.
The poetry of the expanding universe, the poetry of the complexity of life. We're not normally equipped to understand, but science gives it. Science is opening your eyes to the wonderfulness of what's there. Science is opening your eyes to the poetry of the expanding universe.
To come to you, Carl Sagan, could you help me by putting into layman's terms what was involved with this Big Bang?
The early cosmos was everywhere white hot. But as time passed, the radiation expanded and cooled. Then little pockets of gas began to grow, steadily brightening. We call them the galaxies.
It was the beginning of the universe and of time itself. Happened before the Big Bang could not affect what happened after.
The poetry of the expanding universe, the poetry of the complexity of life. We're not normally equipped to understand, but science gives it.
In the Big Bang, we had equal amounts of matter and antimatter. And as soon as these met each other, they annihilated together. And this battle played out whilst the universe expanded. Its first minute of existence. And this battle played out whilst the universe expanded. In its first minute of existence.
It's not all that hard to detect the Big Bang. All you need to do is change the channel until you come between two stations. About 1% of the snow and noise comes from the Big Bang itself. We're all eavesdropping on the birth pangs of the cosmos.
It was the beginning of the universe and of time itself.
And this battle played out.
Science is opening your eyes to the poetry of the expanding universe.
And this battle played out whilst the universe expanded. In its first minute of existence.
It was the beginning of the universe and of time itself.